Hey there, dear listeners. Just a few quick announcements before we jump into the final episode of our Twin Rivers arc. First of all, since this is the end of the arc, we're going to be taking a quick break just to give our editors some much-needed R&R. So instead of a regular episode on April 9th, we're going to be providing you with an interview with Evan Noon from Imp Games. He's a friend of the pod and creator of Twice Dead in Terminus, a Wild West 5th edition adventure. Then we'll be back to the Badlands on April 22nd for our next regular episode. Also, stay tuned after this ep for a promo from our friends at the Monsters Playbook, a Monsters of the Week actual play podcast. But for now, on with the show.
Welcome back to Mage Hand High Five. I'm your Dungeon Master, Casey Pappas, and with me are our players, alongside their respective Powerpuff Girls.
Ooh, I love it.
Robin Langenhop as Blossom.
You know, I'm on board with it. Hi, Robin Langenhop playing Hayden Kincaid, who is not the leader in any way, shape, or form.
Rowan McStay as Bubbles.
Oh, howdy, I'm Rowan McStay playing Salome Briar, who probably also corresponds to Bubbles in this group.
And Max Weinberg is Buttercup.
Yeah, that really checks out. Max Weinberg playing Stump Steenling, and Stump is once again probably also going to be Buttercup in this situation.
Stay tuned for our Powerpuff Girls campaign later on.
Oh, stop. That'd be so fun.
That would actually be really fun.
You know what? Hit us up on socials if you want to see us or hear us do a Powerpuff Girls reminiscent campaign. One shot.
Great. Let's dive right in.
Last time on Mage Hand High Five, you fought off Courtois, saving Charlie in the process. You met with LaMarche, giving him the lowdown on the Jamesons' impending military invasion, and on the plan to try and save Salome's aunts in Blackthorn Hollow. LaMarche offered an alliance and anything he could do to help on the journey. You revealed that Courtois was after you for information she thought you had. You realized Rat may have this information, but that the stone lodged in his temple is suppressing it. Stump privately recalled his personal history with the amulet. He stole it from the Church of the Eternal Flame. LaMarche has his personal doctor take Rat on as a patient. You return to the Traveler's Respite, reuniting Charlie and Portens. And when we last left off, you shared a tender moment with Hayden feeling truly at home.
I looked all pretty.
Aw.
Yeah.
So you all got a good night's sleep, or in some cases a night's sleep.
Hey, Hayden got one. That's what matters.
Hayden got a good night's sleep. You all wake in the Traveler's Respite, refreshed, having long rested.
During that long rest, Stump was doing a couple things. He was making some poisons and potions. He was using some of the ingredients he found. I made one greater healing potion, and I made two assassin blood poisons. And he also spent some time changing out one of his infusions from the alchemy jug into Goggles of Night, which, as we get to breakfast this morning, he goes up to Salome and says, hey, kid, I know that you sometimes have some difficulty seeing in the dark, and we've been in some dark places recently, both, you know, physical and metaphysical, but I thought that maybe you could use these. And he pulls them out and hands the goggles to Salome.
Well, as I live and breathe, what are these? Also, honey, you look tired. Are you all right? Did you sleep at all last night?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine. I've had a kid. It's fine.
You know what's valid?
What are these? Thank you.
These are Goggles of Night, which is a magic item that lets you have dark vision up to 60 feet. And if you already have dark vision, which we know you don't, it would increase your vision up 60
no way.
Additional feet.
Hold on. Turn off the lights. I like, go find a closet to hide in.
Stump blows out the candle, I guess, in the breakfast tavern.
In the tavern, you blow out the candle, and the person serving is like, "Come on,
Oh, sorry. Hold on one second. I just go into like, I go find like a little broom closet and hide in there and look at all the supplies and come back out real excited. Stump. Oh my God. I can't thank you enough for that. This is going to, you know what? I hope I do a little bit better in dark spaces. If I don't, I guess I don't have an excuse anymore.
I mean, me too. Let's just hope we don't run into any situations where we need mayonnaise. So,
you know what, Stump? I was about to ask, just to clarify, this does not in any way produce mayonnaise. Ooh, that was a very long pause for that particular question.
Wait, did
you got a roll for that?
I just rolled a nat 20 to see if it could produce mayonnaise. Casey, will you allow me to have my goggles of night produce mayonnaise?
What a waste. What a waste of a roll. For the folks at home, Casey has fully died. Just completely. Rubbing the temples.
Friends, I'm at a crossroads.
Stump, did you give up your mayonnaise jar for this?
Yeah, I mean, we've been eating at a lot of restaurants recently because we're like in town, so I can just like grab some from there, you know?
Honey, that is just so sweet of you. Wait, hold on. Why are these lenses fogging up a little bit? I like pull off the glasses. And it's just mayonnaise has coated the full front of the glasses.
Sorry, I was just eating like the last of the mayonnaise out of my jar as I was making them as kind of like a one last hurrah situation, you know?
Yeah, but now I think it's coming out of the glasses.
I don't know, we'll push that button.
Okay.
I really just hope it's mayonnaise.
Just like squirts out.
I hope to all the almighty gods that this is just mayonnaise.
Yeah, every time you use it, roll a d20 on a one, mayonnaise squirts into your eyes.
Oh God, okay.
What happens if you roll a 20?
Mayonnaise squirts into someone else's eyes.
Aha!
It's a weapon.
Well, Stump, truly, thank you so much. I wish I had something to give you in return. I mean,
Don't worry about it. Just, you know, helping you helps us all, you know?
Well, thank you. I'm not quite as crafty as you, but if I find something, I'll give it to you.
Well, maybe sometime today we can make up for the whole bolo tie incident and get you something a little more special.
Oh, you know what? You're not wrong. Maybe we'll try to find Stump a little gift.
Great.
What?
Nothing.
So in terms of things that you wanted to do today, you wanted to go shopping for Stump.
Mm-hmm.
And you wanted to head up a discussion with Dr. Bancroft.
Yeah, I suppose we should probably wake the doctor up. She's also here, right? So she's in the same place as us.
Yes, she is in the Traveler's Respite. I think she was sharing a room. Like, she might be sharing a room with Portence and Charlie.
Got it.
As Stump munches on a piece of toast.
We're at the continental breakfast at the Traveler's Respite.
Oh, yeah.
There's little Trix boxes.
It's got the little...
Solomon just made an Eggo.
Like a mini tub, one of those like mini individual containers of like grape jelly.
Oh, Stump, look, they did the thing with the eggs where you just kind of plop the egg and it heats up and you flip it over and then the middle part of the egg is still kind of yellow and it goes woo-woo when you cut it open. They did that thing, you know.
Did you not cook eggs yourself?
Is that not... Oh, that was a special day when we got that.
Good for you, kid.
Never mind. I guess that's more normal than I thought.
Hey, no, that's real nice. You give me some of that. Solomon's definitely been used to the finer things and is sort of just like politely choking down a continental breakfast.
This is the best meal I've ever had.
You have the driest bran muffin that you've ever eaten.
No.
They have bran muffins?
The bran muffins here are terrible.
I can't believe they put bran muffins out here. I mean, who are they? They're trying to get people in fights.
While y'all are fighting, what do we want to ask Dr. Bancroft today? So obviously we got to ask, like, what the door is and, like...
If she knows anything about the maps that these amulets create and what they might be referencing, that might be very helpful information.
We sort of owe her a heads up about the fact that the Jamesons are trying to fund her research to use it as a weapon. I mean, I think that's sort of...
Oh, for sure.
She deserves a warning, if nothing else.
Oh, absolutely.
But she might be able to help us understand what kind of a weapon it might be. I mean, look, I'm not always that clever. Like Thaddeus always used to say, it's a good thing I was good looking. But I was trying to put two and two together.
Okay, we need to not have...
Please don't insult my friend.
We don't need any...
It's fine. So
no, it's not.
Okay. So it's all right. But anyway, I was looking at some of the the bass reliefs and things like that that Dr. Bancroft was showing us. And there's a lot of similar imagery to the church. And I know their whole thing of the flame scorching the world, and it might come back and scorch it again. I don't know. There seem to be some parallels there. Am I the only one that's picking up on that?
I'm picking it up, and I don't really want to, but it's there.
Now that you say it, it makes a lot of sense, you know?
Well, I mean, I guess I'm curious about if any of this has anything to do with whatever Courtois and them are trying to cover up.
I mean, if it's not all of it, it's certainly part of it.
I don't know. Anything else we want to run by her?
I mean, that's plenty. We might come up with more in the moment, but that's quite the conversation that we're already gearing up for.
It's a list. We might have to, you know what? I'm gonna bring her some coffee. I go over and like pour a little coffee and get like a little side tray of sugar and cream, put it on a little saucer and be like, oh, well, you know, we'll wake her up with breakfast.
Ooh, we got coffee on Robin days. had to keep our minds sharp.
Hayden, you know what? You can get all the coffee you want today.
Oh, no. Really?
You can get half the coffee you want today.
all right.
Y'all, before any more shenanigans occur, y'all head upstairs and go to Dr. Bancroft's room. You knock. You hear Portens say, who is it?
It's us.
Hello.
Your best friend.
Good morning, sunshine.
He sort of like cracks the door open, peeks and says, okay. And he ushers y'all in.
I got coffee.
Hayden's got coffee.
It's just for me, though.
You want some?
You know what? I'll take some.
All right. Here you go, darling.
As you enter the room, Dr. Bancroft has like taken over the desk and like has research papers, books out, just covering the desk as just sort of pouring over the notes, and looks at y'all when you come in. And she says, how is everything? Am I still a fugitive from people in some form or fashion?
Not actively, but might be good to keep your head down in a general sense.
Okay.
We have a lot to discuss.
I didn't know if I was able to go down to the Continental Breakfast, so I was going to pass on that, but...
Oh, would you like a bran muffin? Or some less threatening breakfast item?
This woman is from Twin River, Hayden.
She says, you know what? Actually, I'm good.
Sorry.
I did bring you some coffee.
Oh, I'll take coffee. I'm in academia. I'll take coffee.
All right, darling. Well, here you go. Look, I'm sorry about my friend. They're not from around here, so they're not really used to the whole bran muffin thing still.
Hey, cultural differences.
My body's vibrating. Coffee's lovely.
Are they?
Okay.
Are they, are they all right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they'll be fine. We do have probably kind of a lot to talk about. I will say, you know, you're safe for now. I think we took care of the sort of immediate danger, but we sort of need to talk about the less immediate danger.
Okay. I guess I'll just have to take your word on that. But I'm always down for a discussion. What would you like to talk about?
How about doors?
Well, that is a subject that I do have a decent amount of information on, seeing as how that is sort of my main focus, my main area of study.
It's kind of become our main area of study, too, due to circumstances.
Yeah, we've been studying the hell out of doors.
Fascinating. So what you're saying is you might have information for me as well.
Absolutely.
She sort of sits upright in her chair.
Why are we being so cheeky about this?
Hayden puts the coffee down.
Hayden, where'd you put the amulet?
Oh, right. About that. I will get it out. And Casey, can I roll a sleight of hand to keep that little bit of information secret?
Yes.
That's a 23. So Hayden has a secret compartment at the base of their quiver of crossbow bolts. So Hayden flings open their coat and goes digging around in there while behind their back, they unclasp the opening at the bottom of the quiver and just quickly switch his hands back over to make it look like it was just in their pocket of their coat the whole time, when really it was in a completely different spot.
Clever.
It's still wrapped in a little hanky so that it never actually touches Hayden's skin.
Mm.
He goes, Yes, I believe this is the object to which we were referring, and sets it down on the table and carefully unfurls the hanky to reveal the amulet.
Dr. Bancroft's jaw drops, and she says, Is this genuine?
I mean, I don't know. If it's a fake, it's a very good one.
Do fake ones do this? And I go to press the button.
The whole map lights up, and she's just sitting under it, and she goes,
"Where did you get this?"
That's kind of a funny story.
Where did you get it, Stump?
So, Larissa sent me on a mission to go steal an amulet that I didn't know what it was from the Focus and Dominant, which is that big church and of the Church of Flame at Threed, and I did it. It was creepy as hell. And at the end, as I was leaving, I got away, but someone kind of messaged me in my head, like was sending and was like, "Hey, come work for us." And I kind of realized that I wasn't really going to ever be my own person if I kept working for either the church or Hazek. So I ran away to the mountains, tried to hide it. And then I did that pretty good for about 20 years. And then an assassin from Hazek came and tried to take it. And I killed him. And then they chased me. And then I was crimed and I got trained. And then I met these people and then they were attacked. And we...
Stump just relays the entirety of the campaign right now in kind of like really short like bullet points.
Okay,
to Dr. Bancroft.
Hold on, Stump. You stole that amulet from the church?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you didn't think that was valuable information to provide before this moment?
Like the Eternal Flame Church? That didn't seem relevant.
Well, I mean, the amulet was like importance number one. But, like, how I got it was, you know, I got a lot of things. Hayden, how'd you get your shirt?
Do you? No.
Okay.
No.
I did not get my shirt from the church, and my shirt does not have some weird cursed power over you.
So, that you know of.
Stump.
That I know of.
So you took it from the church?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Doctor, we're pretty much under the impression that. Well, actually, I guess now we kind of know for sure that the church wants something to do with these amulets and these doors. And we also know that Jameson seems hell-bent on finding your research and possibly you while they're at it. And I know folks must have been real flattering with you about your research and your work out here, and you really are doing some incredible things. But you got to remember that the Jamesons are, and have always been, arms dealers. I mean, please trust me when I say that they are not in the business of funding research for its own sake. I hope you understand we might have to ask you to take some caution with the information that you're distributing and to who.
I understand that. However, academic funding being as it is, I don't exactly have alternatives sometimes.
In the interest of you continuing to have that funding, you might not want to give them all the information that you get.
I will say that certain events have changed my perspective, and that there might be things more important than academic funding. However, my focus is not on what the Jamesons can get from my research. My focus is what I can come to understand about the people that walked before us. I will do what I can to answer your questions, but I am also filling in the blanks.
Well, look, I mean, I think I speak for all of us when I say we'd love to kind of put some pieces together with you here, but we need you to understand how important it is that some of this information doesn't get into the wrong hands.
Well, seeing as how Jameson soldiers busted down the auditorium and may have caught fire to it, I understand that this may be a little more relevant than I was originally supposing. So all of that to say, what questions can I answer for you?
Is the map still displayed?
The map is still overhead.
Do you know where this is pointing us? Or where this is? It seems to change every time we look at it.
She looks at it and she says,
My first guess would be that it goes to a site of great importance.
the landscape, you're correct, does not match our current landscape, which means that whatever this is a map of, it is a map of either a world that no longer exists or exists in a place that is not here.
Has any of your research made any reference to other worlds or other planes?
Tellera was what came before, right?
Tellera, yes. I, from the limited amount of the language that I've been able to decipher, Tellera is a name that continues to pop up, and it is used in... The usage is indicative of a place as opposed to a person or an idea. It seems that Tellera was the place that these people inhabited. And so perhaps, she looks at the map again, this is a map of Tellera.
Well, I'm going to get some more coffee.
No, you're not.
Hayden, just drink a glass of water in between, would you?
All right, if I must.
Decaf, maybe?
Doctor, do you know if anything about the City of Black Glass myth ties into Tellera at all? I mean, I just remember some of the folks we were talking to who'd spent a little longer around the door. The door had shown them pictures of the city.
The City of Black Glass does show up in sort of the myths that seem to be tied to this. None of the sort of research that I've seen references the City of Black Glass, but there are ties. The legends seem to come from the same sources as people who investigate these types of ruins. The legends sort of seem to tie hand in hand. Why do you ask?
Another funny story. Last night I had there was a big city, and it was made of glass, and that glass was black. I don't know if it's really, like, important. Yeah, we can move on. So tell us about this door you...
Oh, sweet, sweet stump.
So in your dreams, you saw a city of black glass.
Yeah.
Stump, we really need to circle back and have a discussion about what is pertinent information to share with the rest of us, because your idea seems to be somewhat skewed.
Stump. How long have you spent in the proximity of this item?
Like 20 years. I wore it on a necklace. If it was important enough for both the church and Hazek to want it, I made sure it wasn't near anybody else and no one else knew about it.
I'm worried about the effect that proximity is having.
Oh, honey, we're all worried about the effect the proximity is having. I mean,
there's a reason we weren't letting Stump carry it on his person.
I don't think that's an awful idea. This item, there are carvings, pictures of these types of items. Some of the ancient people of our world, and she brings up the picture showing people removing items from the door. They used items like this to open the door and then removed items from whatever lies beyond.
I think one of the folks from Jameson had another one of these out in Providence.
And that one was a weapon.
Yes.
And this one is a map.
You reckon there's more that could do other things?
I would reckon. It seems that these were items crafted for specific purposes. Have you come across a book?
What kind of book?
And she holds up the picture of the bas relief, and among the... most of the items that the people carry from the door are like small circles. But one of them is a book.
That's not something we've run into, right?
That is not.
I'm not much of a reader.
Yeah, no, I haven't run into it either. But, I mean, we've only been traveling for about 2 weeks or so. Any idea what it is?
Whatever it is, it was taken from beyond the door. I have... been able to decipher some of the language of these ancient people.
Well, that's exciting.
If I were to have this book, I might be able to find answers.
I mean, we can certainly try and track it down. I think if we found it, we may have to have a conversation about what you want to do with those answers, Doctor.
My first and only priority is knowledge. What happens with that knowledge is up to people with more power than me.
Like, I don't know about all that. I mean, I think you being the only one that has it gives you quite a bit of power over what's done with it.
If the effects of this are as far-reaching as we are supposing, I don't think any one person should have the authority over that. I'm just saying, if this book were found, I may be the only person to be able to decipher it.
Which means you need to keep yourself safe. And more likely than not, you need to keep yourself hidden.
Hey, Pee-Pee, you got any more costumes there?
Is that the nickname now, Stump?
Parton says, that is not acceptable.
Well, what we can do is talk to Mr. LaMarche and get her some protection. I mean...
It's fair.
Certainly the head of Twin River is going to be able to make sure she's protected, at least for a while. Might even be able to help her hide away.
Right. Well, if that is a resource that's available, then yeah, I believe that might be the best way to go.
Right. Well, we'll run it by Mr. LaMarche. We'll see if he can offer a little bit of protection for you.
Bancroft says, another thing. The door that I found and the door that you found, I don't know if they all are connected. I don't know if they lead to the same place, because honestly, before last night, I thought the legend spoke of this one door.
Hmm.
So what I know is behind the door that I found, the door has some sort of keeper, some sort of sentinel.
Did you see them?
Holds up another picture of a bas relief, and you see the large figure emerging from the door with fire spraying from its hands, destroying some of the ancient people of this world.
I've been wondering on this for a minute, and I couldn't help but notice that some of the pictures you've been showing us, I mean, especially that one, have a pretty striking resemblance to some of the mythology around the Church of the Eternal Flame. I can't help but wonder, do you think that maybe this sentinel has something to do with the origin of the flame?
I have limited knowledge of sort of the Eternal Flame's core beliefs. I do know that they believe that the world was made ready for life by a cleansing flame, and that someday that flame will come back and cleanse the world once more, and maybe the cycle will reset. If the Eternal Flame and this, as she points to the figure, are connected, then that means that this, she points to the figure again, is older than anything we know. The Eternal Flame's beliefs have been around for a very long time. Their core system of beliefs is one of the oldest in our known world. These doors, this thing, that could mean that it's older than everything.
Well, shit.
So all that to say, I haven't had too much time to make that connection, but now that you have, I might need to have more coffee.
I may have consumed all of it. I apologize.
All of it at the Continental Breakfast, Hayden?
I don't know. They got mad at me, so I stopped pouring.
Incredible.
Oh, Hayden, sweetheart, we're going to have to carry you around town today.
I'm going to be on a journey.
Okay, so what we can do, and I think what is within our power to do, is, I mean, I don't know if y'all are up for it, but we can try to get a look at this other door. And eventually, I'm sure that we're all going to have to follow wherever that map is leading and find out more. If we get our hands on that book, we can let you know. And we can try to set up some level of protection for you from Mr. LaMarche.
Stump, the City of Black Glass, did you see where it was?
Did I?
I think, Stump, honestly, all you can see of the outside of the city was like just desert.
Sand and sky.
Yeah, just sand and sky.
Dr. Bancroft says, I have an idea about where that map might lead.
Aunt, you going to just stop talking right there?
Yeah, you want to tell us? We need to get you some more coffee first, Doc?
She just looks at you like,
Stump, you had a dream about a legendary city of black glass? And now you have a map that goes to a place that you don't know where it goes to?
That makes sense, but
Do you we know were all where... kind of thinking it, but like, you got any idea where it might be going?
Yeah,
no,
yeah,
but it seems like the map might.
Yeah, well, that was, you're the smartest person in the room, and that was what you were coming up with?
She's like, okay, all right, well, it seems that everyone has already made come to this logical conclusion, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a treasure map.
Okay.
Like, yeah. Come on.
Awesome.
We got a few things to do. It's been, you know, 1,000,000,000,000,000 years, you know, things have been around. It'll still be there. We got a couple things on our checklist to do, so.
Well, hell, I mean, we can try to go check it out.
Yeah, but we got to find your aunts first.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, I'm sorry. I ain't going anywhere before I'm going to Blackthorn Hollow. But long term, we can check it out.
It warrants further research, but it warrants further research by people who know what they're getting into. Let's start looking for that book. There's not a whole lot I can do from inside a hotel room. But this book has been on my mind for as long as I've discovered its existence.
Well, you got any idea where we could start?
I don't know. This book could be anywhere. It could be in somebody's hands already.
You spent a lot of time around the door, haven't you?
A decent amount.
You mind if I run kind of the same test I ran on my friend here on you? No, no offense or anything. I just want to make sure everything's on the up and up. Good for you to know, if nothing else.
Sure. It's better to know than not.
All right. I'm gonna take your hand for a minute, if you don't mind. I'll cast Detect Evil and Good on Dr. Bancroft. This kind of came up last time where, like, I know if there's a place or object that has been magically consecrated or desecrated. Mm-hmm. And I think you gave me that stump kind of was.
Yes. You cast it. Is it an area of effect spell, or is it on one specific place?
Great question. It is 30 feet, so it's everybody in the room.
Okay.
Or everything in the room.
You cast it. Bancroft comes up clean. Hayden comes up clean. Stump is a little worse.
Ooh, even not having been in contact with the amulet? Stump, you're looking a little worse off than you were before. Doctor, you're okay, though, so I guess that's something.
Just from touching the button right now?
Maybe. I mean, that's the only time he's been in contact with it.
Can I do, like, just like an intelligence or an arcana or some sort of check to maybe understand why it maybe accelerated so much in the last, like, few days versus when I was holding it for 20 years?
I mean, you come to understand that it was not always active in the past 20 years.
Okay. Mm.
And that it is, like, glowing constantly now.
Oh, so that's new.
Well, I mean, not like the glow pulsing, like that is a recent development.
Oh, I'm starting to wonder if maybe it's not just having to do with you and what you're doing with the amulet. I wonder if something is stirring.
I mean, it probably has to do with me because I held it for so long, but if it's gotten worse.
Of course, but I mean, like, there might be a reason all this started hitting the fan at one time.
In that case, can I have it back so it doesn't do this to anybody else?
Oh, absolutely not, honey.
Absolutely not.
Stump, make a charisma saving throw.
God damn it.
Fuck, I was just about to cast Protection from Evil and Good on Stump. Shit.
17.
Ah.
17, okay. Stump, as everyone's talking about the amulet, it's almost like this moment where the conversation starts to fade around you, and you look over at the amulet, and you see it sort of rattling on the table, and then the world just pops back in and everyone's talking around you and you don't know what just happened.
Can we make a roll to see if we noticed that?
What's your passive perception?
My passive perception is only 13.
Okay.
My passive insight is 16, if that changes anything.
Oh yeah, my passive insight is 14.
With passive insight, you do see Stump falls a little quiet. That he's maybe not contributing as much to the conversation as everybody else.
You all right, buddy?
Yeah. I think so. I stayed up late making those, like, potions and things, you know?
All right, but just go ahead and, you know, keep us posted on anything that happens related to that amulet. I really don't want to see you keeping that to yourself. You know, I don't think it's good for you.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what? We have plenty of other things we need to get to today, so as lovely as this conversation has been, and not upsetting at all, I think we might need to skedoodle a little bit and get back to our other activities. You do whatever you like. You're safe in town. We'll make sure that no one, you know, is coming after you or anything like that. And while I'm talking, I will palm the amulet and put it back into place.
Roll a big old deception check because there is a giant map.
Oh, well, I mean, I'll bump it to turn off the, like, I'll use the hanky to bump the button.
Okay, yeah, you turn the map off and hide the amulet away again. And you all head out of the Traveler's Respite and go shopping. Stump, you're looking for studded leather armor?
Yeah, I would love some studded leather armor and maybe a short sword. Nothing special, but just something that's a little better than a
maybe
dagger.
A new bony to replace Jim.
Yeah.
No, nothing
there's no
can
replacing
replace Jim.
Jim.
Yeah, you can't replace Jim.
You did.
Yeah, you all go shopping. You are able to buy those things. As you're shopping, you are tapped on the shoulder, and a courier says...
Stump flinches real hard, because the last time someone in this shopping district tapped him on the shoulder, he was put to sleep by a tiny dwarf.
Yeah,
so
that's fair.
Stump is aggressive. He pulls out his dagger. Hey, hey, hey.
The courier goes, I was sent by Maverick LaMarche. He says the real Maverick LaMarche. He says that an invitation is extended to you tonight at the Wet Rat. All drinks are comped, courtesy of him, and that it's to sort of celebrate the city and to sort of raise morale after a tough night for everyone with the fire wizards. I don't really know all of it. I'm just the messenger.
You don't worry your pretty little head about it. We got that all covered. Thank you for the information.
You think I'm pretty?
Oh, absolutely. Everybody's pretty today. My heart is beating so fast and so loud.
He's radiating.
You are really something on coffee.
You know, I had a lovely evening and I'm having a lovely day.
Did Mr. LaMarche say if we could bring a plus one?
I mean, all drinks at the Wet Rat are free, so I don't think there's like a list of people who are allowed to go.
Amazing. Okay, I can't wait. I was gonna have Dr. Bancroft tell Sasha, Bethany, and Gerard.
Incredible.
There's a couple grad students who could use a drink.
Yeah, the invitation is extended to them, and you all head to the Wet Rat in the evening. As you walk in,
are we cheered as saviors of Twin River?
God, I
no,
hope not.
No. This place is this place is popping. Everyone's here.
So no one runs us out as hat thieves.
No.
Stump walks in as if he's expecting a hero's welcome.
Nothing. Like, everyone is drinking. Everyone is having a great time. Nobody's starting a fight because nobody wants to get kicked out. Because this place is wild. But, Stump, you walk in with your arms raised like, hey, look who it is. And, like, people just look over at you like, okay.
Stump, what you doing?
No one knows we saved the city, Stump. That's not really public information.
That's true, yeah. I mean, I was hoping, you know, just like living a little.
You know what? Let's just save a few cities. Eventually, we'll get the hero's welcome. It'll happen.
Listen, you walk out that door, you come back. I'll applaud you when you walk
Ooh,
in.
Yes, let's do it.
You can curtsy and everything.
No,
it's
okay.
No,
you're
our
hero. No,
it's, I don't need
hero,
pity
Stump
applause.
Stump, yes!
No,
Stump!
No,
wow.
Bethany, Gerard, and Sasha are all like,
yeah!
You did it.
Bethany, how y'all doing?
Way to go. Okay. Proud of you.
Man, all 3'6" is just radiating.
And as you all walk in, all three of you see something that catches your eye.
Mm.
Hayden.
Yes?
You see someone at the bar. They are a very average looking person, sort of just like sort of the average of people.
Conspicuously average?
Conspicuously average, almost forgettable. But the hat they wear is familiar.
No.
If not for itself, then for the feather in the hat band.
Excuse me, friends. I have business to attend to. I will be right back.
Salome, you scan the bar. And at the end is a tall figure. Seemingly unnoticed by anyone else, it stands, long tassels hanging from the brim of its hat, as it seems to wait patiently. And no one seems to acknowledge this figure.
Oh, I look right at them and then lean over to Stump and say, "You could be in on your own tonight?"
"Yeah, it's not the first time."
"All right, have a good evening." And I...
"Yeah, you too."
Walk toward the tassel person.
And Salome hurries off. Stump, you see Earl Letterbetter sitting at the bar.
Ah, yeah, Earl!
He is patting the seat next to him, making eye contact with him.
Seal the deal, Stump. Yeah, seal the deal.
I go to Earl. No, I'm not going. What? What does that mean?
As I'm like transfixed by the tassel person walking over, just like look over at Stump real quick and say, "Good luck."
What do you talk? I don't know. What do you mean, good luck? I'm just having a conversation with a guy. I don't. What is this?
And with that, the evening begins, and each of you go your separate ways. Chapter 1. Hat Trick. Hayden, the wet rat is popping off. Everybody is in here. Across the sea of people, you see at the bar a rather nondescript man.
Mm-hmm.
Atop his head is a little bowler derby. And sticking out of the band of that derby is one very familiar rainbow-colored feather.
I bet there is.
You see this man slap down a bill. The barkeep hands him an entire bottle of whiskey.
Okay.
The man swoops it up, turns, and very briskly makes his way for the door. You see him sort of pushing past people, sort of going, "Oh, okay, excuse me. Excuse me. Yeah, sorry. Oh, that was me. Excuse me." Before he makes it out the door, and you see him turn and walk quickly down the street.
I immediately head out of the bar in order to stalk at a safe distance. I want to know where this person's going, but they're not getting out of my sight.
Okay. There's a lot of people heading towards the wet rat, and so this man is one of the few people heading away. So it's pretty easy to keep track of him. He's sort of moving past people. A couple people bump into him, and he brushes himself off, keeps going. He seems in a hurry before he suddenly snap on his heel, turns, and darts down an alley.
Oh, shit. I start booking it. Yeah.
Okay. As you turn down the alley, you see the last flip of his trench coat go up and over the building at the end of the alley.
Ooh, I should have limbered up for this. All right.
roll an athletics check.
You sure it can't be an acrobatics check?
It can be an acrobatics check, yeah.
Great, because I have a +0 to athletics.
Okay, that's fair.
That's a 15.
Okay, yeah, it takes you a little bit longer than you might have expected, but you are able to flip onto a dumpster and then hop up, grab a gutter, pull yourself up. As soon as you pull yourself up, you see this man sort of with both feet hop off the other end of the building, and you pursue. As you near the edge, you look down and you see this man is heading for a sort of smaller building near the edge of Twin River. It looks sort of like an abandoned warehouse.
Is this anywhere in relation to anywhere we've been already in Twin River? I don't want to be walking directly into a trap right now.
This is sort of the outskirts of one of the higher up levels. And so you might have seen it from a distance, but this is not a part of the city that you're familiar with. For the most part, you spent most of your time near the center of the bridge of Twin River. This is more on the outskirts near the slope of the bridge.
Based on my watching this person as I've been following them this whole way, do I have any sense over whether they know I'm following them?
Roll insight.
Oh, no. I only roll poorly when it's funny. That's a natural one.
Ooh. honestly, Hayden, you don't think this person knows. You're pretty confident that you are being real sneaky right now. It's almost like you're doing better than you've done in a while. Like, this is, you're at your peak right now.
I got my hair done, and the wind resistance makes me impossible to detect.
Salome put ribbons in their hair. They're just brrr.
It's like a card in the spokes of a bicycle.
Totally. Your
little propellers.
Great. You're able to quickly hop down, and you head towards the abandoned warehouse. You see real quick the man looks around and then ducks under the boards.
Yeah, I'll scope this place out, because the last person who had this hat is somebody I don't want to trifle with. Or I do, but I want to be okay. Really good at it.
You sort of sneak close, peek in, and as you do, you see the man sort of head towards the middle of the room, the whiskey bottle in one hand. He sort of holds it up and says, "I scored, come and get it." And as he does, he removes the bowler hat. You see the sort of disguise vanish, and he changes into a half-elven girl, maybe 15 or 16.
Oh, shit. Is it another child gang?
As she says, "Come and get it," three other figures emerge from the edges of the warehouse, a human, a goblin, and a dwarf. Each of them is around the same age as the girl. Their clothes aren't particularly ragged, so you assume they aren't urchins.
Okay.
The human boy reaches out for the bottle and says, "All right, Sorsa to the rescue." And Sorsa pulls back the bottle and says, "Nuh-uh, I got dibs." Roll insight.
That's better. That is a 24.
A 24. You're able to see just about everything that happens. You see her say, "Nuh-uh, I got dibs." And then a look of hesitation crosses her face as she looks at this bottle of whiskey. The goblin girl pipes up and says, "Well, claim your dibs then." And Sorsa says, "Okay, I will." You see her pop open the bottle, take the tiniest sip you've ever seen anyone take, and visibly hold back disgust. The other ones shout, okay, me next. The bottle passes, and as each person takes a sip, each of them seems equally opposed to the flavor, sipping merely to impress the others.
Hayden is sitting there watching this, just trying to think of, I don't know if I am disgusted with the way in which this hat is being used or damn impressed, but either way, I want to mess with these children.
Yeah, you see the dwarven boy is the last one. He takes a sip and he is sort of least able to hold up the charade and goes,
"Oh, no."
Sort of turns away to go, and then looks up and makes direct eye contact with you. And he says, Shit.
Attention, children. Attention, children. Do not move a muscle or you will all be immediately under arrest.
You see, the dwarven boy immediately throws his hands in the air. And the goblin girl says, "Oh, yeah? You and what army?"
You really want to test that?
Roll.
Fight some kids.
Fight some kids.
Intimidation?
Fight four kids.
Roll intimidation.
Deception?
Yeah. Roll intimidation.
All righty. 8.
Yeah!
I love how trash Hayden's rolling right now.
It's so perfect.
Good. Keep those dice, baby.
The goblin girl looks at her friends, turns back to the voice, and says, "I think you're gonna have to come in and get us."
There's a long pause, and Hayden just goes, Okay. Kicks the window in.
Oh, okay. Hold on. I need you to understand the rolls that I just made.
Oh, no.
You rolled an 8 on intimidation. Uh-huh. The goblin girl rolled a 9. The other 3 rolled a 3, a 2, and another 2.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Sorsa immediately cowers. Like, you see her grab the bowler hat and shove it on over her head. The dwarven boy is gone. You see, he runs off and starts climbing crates in the back, trying to get into the rafters of this building. The human boy just falls to the ground. Actually, you know, he plays dead. The goblin girl stands her ground, though, and says, "All right, come on. Let's go.
Slap a kid."
Okay, I'm going to... This is an absolute waste of magic, but I'm going to cast Longstrider on myself. And then just, with disturbing speed, run down until I am nose-to-nose with the goblin girl. And go, "Say what you just said one more time, little girl."
Re-roll your intimidation check.
That's a 9.
Oh, my God.
Yeah!
They spilled a little bit of whiskey, and just on my dismount right at the end, I just slip a little bit.
With an 18.
No. Am I going to die?
She stares up in your face and then starts poking you in the chest and says, "Listen here, you big shit. This is my playground. And if you don't like it, you can get in line, buddy." Sorsa, Derek, Gormia, get your sorry asses back here. You see the human boy, Derek, sort of like peek out from under his, like, you, like, he's got a tongue out, like lolling, like playing dead, and he just sort of like glances over. The dwarven boy sort of like turns and sits down on the crate that he was climbing. And Sorsa still has the hat on. You see that she is like at the moment changing into like an Arakocra person and sort of stops mid-change. And the goblin girl says, "I want to know what you're doing here."
"You know what? You got some real spunk to you, kid. And I do respect it. So I'm going to level with you. I don't give one shit what you're doing with that whiskey bottle or how you got it. Which, I might add, I did see you get. All I want is what's mine." And I turn into the goblin girl.
Oh. Okay.
"I believe you have some of my property."
She sort of looks at you and says, "The hat then, huh?"
"No, I want the crates. Come on. Obviously, I need the hat."
She says, "Okay, all right. You got one thing right, buddy. I am spunky. And that's why they call me spunky."
Really? Really? Your nickname is Spunky and you just roll with it? You know what? Respect once again. Absolutely.
"Thank you, random person. Now, we found this hat fair and square. If you wanted it so bad, you wouldn't have lost it."
Ooh, buddy. You are treading down the wrong topic, my friend.
"If it's really yours, like you say it is, even though it looks like," she points at you and says, "you don't actually need it. If you want it so bad, then why don't you prove to us that you're better than us? Because right now," she sort of looks around and says, "you ain't."
"You're lucky that I have extensive experience with proving myself to obnoxious children. So here we go." "What's the game, Spunky? What's the game?"
That's so real.
Cracking my knuckles. "Just bring it to me. What's the game?"
She says, "All right. Here's what we're going to do. You and me, we're going to have a little pickpocket pick off.
You're talking to a career criminal, kid. I got this.
Yeah.
You know what? I already stole it, in fact. I have the win. You don't even really need to have the contest.
Gormia sort of goes, ooh.
I don't need your help. I don't need no pity ooze.
Spunky says, yeah, okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll believe that.
Great, thank you. Give me the hat now.
Here's what we're going to do. First one back here with 10 gold that they honorably stole. No borrowing. You have to steal it fair and square. Scout's honor. First person back with 10 gold gets the hat. And I hope you're not too torn up when you go home tonight without your precious hat.
I am not leaving tonight without the hat. Make that perfectly clear.
Then I guess you better win then.
3, 2, 1, go! And then rockets out the front door and is gone.
Wait, she rockets out the door?
Yeah, she's gone. You're standing there with 3 other kids.
I take the hat off of the other kid. It's a master thief contest. I'm gonna steal the hat.
For those of you at home, Casey is fully facepalming right now. Mouth is now covered, staring off into space.
You, okay.
Who needs 10 gold?
Roll a
sleight of hand?
I guess let's do sleight of hand check.
Okay.
A contest with Sorsa.
All right. I've been rolling like absolute garbage, so I may not win this.
God, I hope this is bad.
Thank you for the vote of confidence.
Anytime.
17.
Okay.
Hayden, you see Spunky run out the front door. You look over. Sorsa is watching. The hat is in her hand. You reach out towards the hat and take it from her hand.
Yes.
You, faster than she can snatch it away, grab it from her. And Sorsa says, hey!
It's a thieving contest! Come on!
You see Derek pick up the whiskey bottle, and he's getting ready to chuck it at you.
I hold up my crossbow to him and say, why don't you just either take a drink or take a seat, little one?
He stops and puts it down and says, we really did find it fair and square.
And I just took it fair and square.
Cornelius says, no, you didn't. You agreed to the rules and then just took the hat.
I don't believe I said a single word.
You didn't do anything.
She just started running.
No, you just cheated. you just cheated. You didn't play the game.
You know what? That's true. I did, in fact, just cheat and not play the game. I'm going to level with you. But at the same time, I have the hat. We really can't argue that particular point. You want to try and steal it back from me? Go for it. As Casey starts rolling.
Roll a dex save.
26.
Jeez.
There it is.
There, we're back.
He goes for the hat, and it's the easiest thing. You just, like, hold it up, and he's too slow, and he nearly trips.
I transform to as tall as I can get without changing size categories.
Okay.
And I just hold it up. I'm just like, I can literally do this all day.
Gormia is fully trying for the hat, like jumping up and down, trying for it. Derek is sitting on the ground, arms folded. Sorsa starts crying.
Kids, you don't need it. If you want to learn how to steal whiskey without getting caught, I can teach you how to do that. You don't need the hat to do it. The hat is important to me. And that's why I came here for it. I didn't come here to have some little child's thievery contest. I can make you better at thieving if you really want it. If that's important to you or if it helps you in your lives, I'll teach you how to steal. I just need the hat. It's the only thing I care about.
Derek, like, pauses and goes, wait, can you really make us better at stealing?
Literally been doing it for over a decade, kid. I started thieving
before I was even your age. And I am an unspecified number of years older than that now.
They sort of look at each other and go, okay, well, maybe you get the hat and we don't bother you about it. And you teach us your best tricks.
Well, I will say you can't do my best tricks, but I can show you a thing or two.
Roll a persuasion check with right. advantage.
Ooh. 17.
The kids look at each other and sort of grin, and the morale seems to have improved. And they go, okay, can we start right now?
Absolutely.
Cool. You start back from the earliest lessons you learned with the Pipers. Seize the cheese. Don't bite off more than you can chew. Look after your own.
There's a whole rat-based thing. It's a holdover from a previous person. Just don't worry about it.
They're a little thrown off by the rat usages, but they eventually come around to it, and you teach them from your earliest lessons forward some of the best things that you learned about the Pipers. And as you do, you remember your best escapades with your family. You remember times you almost bit off more than you could chew. You remember Rat's quips, Winona's constant love. And you remember everything that made the Pipers great. Sharing it with these three kids that you've never met before. And for a moment, it feels like the Pipers were never gone. And partway through, the Spunky does return with 10 gold.
I want to roll one last sleight of hand check.
Okay.
I really hope this one goes well.
As you're wrapping up with these kids, Spunky comes back out of breath.
Yeah. I got it.
You know what you did? You absolutely got me. And you know what? I will take my leave. You all enjoy your whiskey. You won fair and square. You all have a good time. And with a 17 sleight of hand check, I want to leave 10 gold in her pocket.
Oh.
As you're exiting, you playfully move past her, and as you do, masterfully drop 10 gold in her pocket.
Alongside the 10 gold is a little note that says, "Steal better." Signed, Hayden of the Pipers.
Oh.
Spunky looks with confusion as you leave. The other three look with admiration as you head off down the street. 10 gold lighter, but a lot more weighted in memories. Chapter 2, Riverbank. Salome, Hayden takes off in one direction. You're standing there with Stump for half a second, and then you see the specter standing at the end of the bar. It is, at the moment, just a shadow. There is no sort of, like, features to it, except its blazing blue eyes.
I start just panicking for a second and looking around to see if anyone's dying.
Everyone is having the time of their life. It's almost out of place here. Everyone's partying, everyone's cheering, and then sort of above it all is a specter of death.
All right. And nobody else seems to be looking at it.
Nope.
Okay.
It is ignored by all.
I slowly walk over to the bar next to where it is, and I just sort of, like, sidle up next to it and wait.
As you move towards the figure, it becomes more and more opaque, and you start to see the details in it. As you approach, the outlines, the detail work, everything about this figure seems to just appear. And as that happens, every other figure around you becomes more and more transparent. In their place float small blue flames. The colors from the room drain as you approach until the whole interior of the bar is lit by these pale blue fires that dance and sway to the music you no longer hear.
Whew.
And now it is just you and this specter surrounded by these tiny fairy fires. The specter gestures as two flames sort of float away from seats at the bar, and it gestures to the seats.
Oh, I just sort of silently take a seat.
The specter sweeps their duster back as they sit down, and you see at their hip is a holster with a silver-plated revolver. They sit, and their face is completely obscured by the tassels that hang from the brim of their hat, and within that, veils and veils and veils, which obscure their face, but through all of these layers, you see the pale blue glow of their eyes.
Well, hi there.
You see as I do.
And they gesture, and they say,
I call them wisps.
What are they?
They are innate to everyone. And everyone has a different story of how they got them. Salome, daughter of Briar, you called upon me. Sent a man across the river that you might speak to me. And I have answered your call. Now speak.
Wow, I wasn't really expecting you to know me. I didn't know that this was going to work. You have to forgive me. I've seen and done a lot of violence lately. And for whatever reason, you always seem to show up when folks are dying. And I'm the only one that can see you. I would like to know who you are and what your business is with me.
I have gone by many, many names. But you may call me...
And they think for a second. And then they say,
V. It is the closest approximation.
Okay. This is a little odd, and I can use an ability for it if I want to. Can okay. I try to intuit a sense of their real name? Like, they're giving me that approximation. Does it come with any kind of, like, feeling or identity behind it?
Roll insight.
20.
They're giving you their name without giving you their name. Because you get the sense that names have power.
I was wondering about that. I gotta ask, V. Didn't seem all too fair to me that you know exactly who I am, and you don't want to tell me who you are.
You say that you see they reach over, and you suddenly notice that there is a bottle and two glasses at the bar. And they pour two drinks. They hand you one, and they take the other. And you're not really sure where this bottle came from.
My favorite. I haven't had this in years.
And they say,
I do not give you my name, my true name, because it's been a long time, and it does not come as easily to me anymore.
You had mentioned last time we spoke that it had been a long time, and you said that you didn't know me, but, well, that you don't exactly know me. But that it had been a long time. Could you tell me more about that, please?
They sort of sit silently for a second, and they say,
in my line of work, there are few to speak with. And few does not speak exactly. More correctly, in my line of work, I have had two to speak with. And one of them is with me now.
And they drink from their glass.
Well, you got somebody else around the corner.
You say that, and they sigh. And they say,
not around the corner, per se, but across the river.
Did you know my mama?
Bathsheba Briar was something impossible. One who contained both life and death. Could see the living and the non-living. Could touch the very essence of wisps.
And they sort of look around the bar at the fires that surround you. And they say,
but she was also more than that. She was my friend. My only friend.
And they pour another drink.
Wow. I mean, I know my mama was easy to get along with. I remember her. How she could ease people across the river. Make it painless. I saw once or twice, I guess, what might have been one of these. I think back to the squirrel. Was she working alongside you to help people across?
She saw me a little younger than you are now. And when she started to help, we started with small things. Animals, critters, varmints. Most animals are able to find their way across the river. It's an instinct. People lose that instinct. Their soul doesn't know where to go. It is my job to stand on the riverbank, and it is my task to take the oars with these hands and row the boat across that great river. Your mother could take the oars too. Your mother could row the boat. And for the first time in a long, long time, I knew peace.
They think about what they've just said as if this is something that they've been thinking about for a very long time but never been able to say. Roll an intelligence check.
Oh, no, don't make me do that. You sure it's not wisdom?
In this instance, I'll also take wisdom.
Okay. 18.
18. You sit pondering for a minute everything they've said. And you look down again, and you see again the pistol holstered at their waist. And it strikes you. Why does V have a gun? If they're the only one to walk this plane, what do they have to fear?
V?
You start to say their name, and you hear a...
V, what was that?
They sigh and drink again from their glass.
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Hey, you might want to slow down on that. What?
You look past,
what is that?
You look past them and see something that you didn't see before. In the topmost corner of the bar is a shadow. Your mind struggles to sort of see its shape. It sort of hangs in the corner as if suspended there. And you see two little beady yellow eyes peeking out of this just sort of cloud of shadow. And V says, don't pay that any mind.
Well, it's making all kinds of noises. I'm going to try not to look at it. Will you tell me a little bit about what it is?
It has no power here. Unless...
And V sort of looks around the bar and says,
unless I need to work.
Oh.
You see, in the material, your bodies, the flesh that surrounds you, keeps your wisp safe. But my job is not just to row these souls across the river. My true job is to make sure they reach the other side.
Is that why you got that gun on your hip for this fellow over here?
I do.
And my mama could help you with that.
And your mama did help me with that.
I've wondered for a long time how she did what she did. But V, if you're here looking for the same kind of help from me, I don't know what I can do for you now. I tried to take over for her. I did everything I could. There was this idea that I could just pick up where she left off, as if those shoes weren't impossible to fill. And I tried, and I failed, and I couldn't do it, and I couldn't see you, and I couldn't see any of this. I mean, hell, how does anybody think I ended up in Threed?
V slams their drink down on the counter.
Salome kind of flinches.
And V whirls on you, and their tassels spin as they do. And they say,
"Child, I was there. I know you couldn't see me."
"Then why didn't you come when I need—"
"I—"
"When I needed you. If you wanted my help, why didn't you come to me then?"
"I tried."
"And what the hell happened?"
"Daughter of Briar, I do not have the answers. When I was tasked, I knew less than you do now."
And they stop, and you see their hand involuntarily goes to their neck.
Is there something they're reaching for?
Roll insight.
14.
Yeah, you see them hesitate at their neck, and there is a... it's out of place. It's a gold sort of chain. It's sort of tucked into their shirt, so you can't see if there's anything on it. And they sort of touch it for a second. And they say,
"I have lost people too. I know what you've gone through. And I know that when a task is thrust upon you, your questions may not be answered. But Salome, you could not see me, and I could not help you. But now, for a reason beyond me, you can see me. But..."
And they pour a glass and they say,
"But I do not know if you are ready."
"I know. I know that I'm not. I wanted to be. V, I did. I wanted to be just like my mama, and I couldn't help them. So instead, I saw them struggle to get by without her. And then, of course, Thaddeus rolls into town right when things are getting real desperate, and he takes a real strong interest in me, gods only know why. And I think we both knew when he offered me an opportunity to make sure I wouldn't have to worry about my family again, that I couldn't say no. Because I couldn't do what my mama could do. And now, I've spent the last 10 years of my life selling my soul to this man for blood money to give to my family that they wouldn't even take. I am the farthest away from my mama that I have ever been. And you want to reach out and ask me for help now? All I can think about is making people like Thaddeus feel what they do. I mean, they seem so fucking bulletproof. And I want to see them bleed. Do you think I have it in me to sit here and ferry souls across the river with you?"
V is silent. And then they say,
"Get up."
"Is that a threat?"
"No."
"I stand."
They stand too. And they walk over to a wisp that sways. And as they do, you see in the corner of your eye the creature, this shadow thing in the bar. It seems to watch V move over to this wisp. And you hear it. And V turns to you and says,
"Touch them."
"Hell, I reach my hand out and touch it.
And as your hand reaches for it, you see the outline of the person swaying. It's a young half-orc man in his 30s. He's dancing with someone. He's had a few drinks tonight. And as you touch his wisp, you see a shudder go over his physical form for a second. And then before your eyes rolls every single thing this man has ever done. You see him handing out money to a beggar. You see him yelling at his mother. You see him kissing someone tenderly under a street lamp. You see him praying to a god you don't know a whole lot about. You see every good thing, every bad thing he's ever done stretched out in front of you. You retract your hand, and he seems to stop for a second. You see him sort of lock eyes with someone else, and he sort of like shrugs and then keeps dancing.
Wow.
And V says, "Everyone crosses the river. Every single one will cross the river one day. Their goods, their bads will be left on this riverbank. They will cross and they will move away. I do not know where they go, but everyone you know will see me one day."
How would you want me to help?
You are not ready to help yet. Salome, there will come a time when I will come for someone you love. It is the way of it.
I understand.
When I come for that person, and when your heart feels like it will burst, know that in all my years of walking, I will never forget how it feels. And as they say that, they pull a little more on the chain around their neck, and you see that it is a gold locket. And they turn and start walking away towards the door, out into the night sky.
Wait.
They freeze.
Will we talk again? How do I find you, if not sending somebody across the river?
Do not call me in that way again. But if you need me, if you truly need me, call my name.
V.
V.
Sure. As they've kind of shown me what surrounds their neck, I sort of hold on to my own holy symbol, like a gift from my own mother, and kind of just nod at them. And I think I just sit back down at the bar and just grab the little glass and watch the wisps moving.
You watch the wisps move, a drink in your hand. V turns back to the door, and you hear a small, "It was good to talk to someone again." As if not said to you, but to themselves. You sit there for a few minutes, watching the wisp lights, dancing, completely unaware of any danger, completely unaware of any universe above them, any plane stacked on top of them. And you wonder, well, you just wonder.
I think as they start turning back into people, if they do, does everything kind of come back to reality?
Yeah, after a few minutes, the outlines begin to appear, and then the details, and then the colors, and then things start to slowly fade back into the material.
As these images are sort of combining and like people start coming back, like people start coming back to fill these spaces where these wisps were. I think Salome comes back to this memory of like how she was raised, that life and death are sacred, and that living people and beings are sacred. And I think watching these people seize them in that way again for the first time in a long time and just weeps.
And as you two, the bartender comes over and says, "You all right, darling?"
"Yeah, I'm fine. Sorry, I just really... You know, sometimes the music just gets to you."
They say, "Well, if you ever need anything, let me know." And as the music plays on, you see the people dancing in the bar. The overlay of the material on top of the beyond. You see, for a minute, both of them in union dancing to the music. Chapter 3, I Wanna Rock. Stump, Hayden is split off, Salome split off. You look over and seated at the bar is Earl Letterbetter, and he is patting the seat next to him.
"Earl!"
He goes, "Stop! Get over here!"
I run over.
Oh, yeah. You hop up on the stool next to him, and he says, "Hey, there he is."
"Yeah. Oh, yeah, you know it."
"What's up?" "Hey, before I forget, I got a message back from your family."
"Oh, wow. Yeah, what is it?"
He slaps a note card down on the table and passes it over to you. And you read, "Stump, I'm so relieved. Jim came home without you. I was worried."
I just went, "Who the hell is Jim and why is he in my house?"
Nope, Jim the pony.
"Good. Oh, perfect.
Jim came home without you. I was worried. Love you. Sally says don't forget to bring her a cool rock."
"God, shit, I keep forgetting. Look for rocks."
"Hey, Stump, I couldn't help but overhear your message. I mean, literally, like, it was sent into my brain, yeah, and I had to write it down on a piece of paper."
"I mean, that makes sense, yeah."
I don't like to reference people's messages, but..."
"No, we're close enough that you can reference some messages,
okay,
yeah."
"Okay, cool. Well, yeah. I mean,
definitely.
If you need a cool rock..." And he sort of, like, looks over his shoulders, and he goes, "I know a guy."
"Well, let's go find this guy."
"Okay, listen. His name is Ricky Rockefeller."
"Of course it is. Of course
he's,
it is.
He's Twin Rivers' premier rock guy. His tagline is, he'll Rockefeller. Get it?
Oh.
Like, he'll Rockefeller. Anyway, if anybody will have a great rock, it'll be that guy."
"I don't have a lot of money, though. That's kind of a problem. Like, is it, like, expensive?"
"I mean, listen. Me and Ricky, we go back a long way."
"Okay.
Maybe we could haggle him down a little bit."
"I could throw some guilt his way, probably."
"Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, who knows? We'll see. We'll see what he's got. He might even be here tonight." And if, like, he sort of talks to one person, who talks to another person, who talks to another person, and eventually that person comes back and goes, "Yeah, Ricky will see you."
"Oh, hi. Yeah, okay."
And you both sort of get moved back to a back room of the Wet Rat. They open a curtain, and there is a small orcish man sitting at a table. And by small, I mean he's like as big as you, but he is full-blood orc. He's a little guy. He's got rings on every finger, like huge gemstones on each finger. And he says,
"Earl Letterbetter, it's wonderful to see you. How you been?"
And Earl says, "You know why? I couldn't be better." And he goes,
yeah. "Who's this guy?"
"Oh, hello. I'm Stump Steenling, apothecary. I was crimed a while ago."
"Hey, you ain't got to go into all that."
"Oh, okay. And Stump is fine."
Earl says, hey, don't worry about it. He's on the level. He's a rock guy." And Ricky looks at you and he goes,
"You're a rock guy."
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm looking for a good, nice, special rock.
The city loves rocks. City loves their rocks. And when they need rocks, they come to me, Ricky Rockefeller. Because they know I'll Rockefeller.
And stuff. Earl turns to you and goes, "Yeah, he gets a lot of mileage out of that one."
I'd love to see what kind of rock you could get for this feller, you know?
What are you looking for? I got agate, amber, amethyst, ametrine, aquamarine, azurite, barite, bismuth, foliite, calcite, carnelian, cavansite, celestite, charoite, chrysoberyl, citrine, copper, dendrite.
Yeah, I haven't heard any that I'm interested in.
Dioptase,
keep going.
Elbeite, fluorite, gold.
Can you describe elbeite halite to me?
Elbeite? Hold on.
Yeah, what's elbeite?
Hold on. I got to think Hold about on. It. it's sort of like a, it's a little green on one side and a little pink on the other side. It's really neat.
Nah, I don't like that.
Anyway,
keep going.
Where was I? Hematite, jasper, kyanite, labradorite, lapis lazuli, malachite, marcasite, meteorite, morganite,
peridot. Meteorite a rock?
Yeah, it's the type of rock that comes from space.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't want that.
A quartz, rhodochrosite, ruby, rutile, selenite,
we
septarian,
do have to do an episode at some point.
Shungite, starlight, stilbite, sulfur, tiger eye, topaz, tourmaline, vanadinite, wolfenite. What are you in the mood for?
What was the fifth one you said?
Hold on.
He sort of thinks about it.
Aquamarine.
Oh, man, yeah, I think Sally would really like aquamarine.
I will say.
Can I see him? Do you have like a showroom or anything like that?
Now I will say. You seem like a discerning type of guy. There's one rock. Beautiful. Beat out all the other rocks.
Yeah?
It was stolen by one of my rivals. A hack. His name is Rocky Rhodes.
No.
Down two levels. He runs a shop. Tries to beat me out. But I'm the rock guy in Twin River. When people want rocks, they go to Ricky Rockefeller, not Rocky Rhodes.
It doesn't roll off the tongue, right? And Earl goes, nah, it doesn't roll off the tongue at all.
He goes, yeah, that's what I thought. I'll make a deal with you.
I do happen to have a particular set of skills that might be able to help you in this situation.
Do you?
Yeah.
All right, you bring me back that rock, you can have it. I want to see the look on Rocky's face tomorrow morning when he goes into his shop and the rock is gone.
Thank you for clarifying that, because I was really confused as to why you'd have me steal the rock from him and then just immediately give it to me. I really didn't see what was in it for you, it's just to see him fucked over, we can do that. I can make that happen.
Yeah, his name is
a lot of guys over.
His name is fucking Rocky Rhodes. Like, what a dickhead.
Okay, it's done. Stump cracks his knuckles and walks out.
Cool. You do that, and he goes, okay, cool, bye.
Throws up a peace symbol, says he's walking.
You leave, and Earl follows you, and he goes,
okay, cool. How do you want to do this thing? Do we just, we case the joint? Like, do we do a sting operation?
I mean, yeah, we could just kind of go in. I mean, it's nighttime.
Yeah.
I'll just pick some locks and go on. What are you, so other than sending, can you do anything, or is it just sending?
Me?
Just really good at sending, yeah.
I'm really good at sending.
Just really, okay.
Yeah, that's kind of like, if there was a subclass, it would sort of revolve around just sending messages and, like, literally nothing else.
Okay. Can you use the message cantrip?
Yeah, I could do that.
What about illusory script?
I got a little bit of illusory script in me.
Okay.
I know the shop he's talking about if you want to go.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, you head down and start to get to a little bit of the seedier side of Twin River, and there is Rocky Rhodes' Rock Emporium sort of standing off to the side. It is sort of a general shop, And there is one large rock in the window. And it is actually really stunning. It's like it's a mixture of there's blue on the bottom, and then it looks almost like a sunburst coming out of the top.
Earl, I realize that I don't know what rock I'm looking for, just that I'm looking for a rock. Can you send a quick message back to Rick? Great, thank you.
Yeah. he holds his fingers up to his head, and he goes, yeah, I think Ricky forgot to tell us. And sends a message, gets a message back, and goes, yeah, it's that one.
Okay, great. I'm going to just kind of do a casual case the joint, you know?
Okay.
You know, see what there is.
Yeah.
Like walk around, if there's anything in the back, look up.
This is like a really normal shop. Like there's the door leading in, the big glass window. The sides are sort of connected to the shops next over. So there's not really getting around the building. The building itself is one story, so there's not really a whole lot of height to go up.
Well, is there anybody around?
No, this place is pretty empty. You get the sense that it being free drinks night at Wet Rat, most people are there.
Okay, I'm just going to go. I'm going to look around a little bit, make sure no one's watching, and then go pick that lock.
Sure. Roll a perception check, and then a Thieves Tools, I think, dexterity check.
Okay, well, that's a 10 perception.
Okay, you don't see anybody.
That's an 18 for the Thieves
Tools. Nice.
Oh, yeah. Hmm? You maneuver the tools around, you hear a click, and the lock springs open.
Don't get in, Earl.
Me?
Yeah, you're coming in.
Oh, okay, yeah. I mean, you want me to go first?
No, just come in with me. Don't stay outside.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I'll come in too.
He comes in. You're both inside. The place is kind of hard to describe. Like it's like a really low down jewelry shop. Like it's like a pawn shop basically, but for rocks.
Earl, give me the level here. Is Rocky like an actual jerk, you know?
Rocky Rhodes? Yeah. I mean, like he's sort of the guy muscling in on Ricky Rockefeller's territory.
What is he like, a bad guy? I'm taking the rock one way or the other, but
oh, okay. I mean, I don't think he's a cool guy. I mean, most people who get into the rock business, they're kind of jaded.
Oh, my God.
Stump just stares silently, stone-faced at Earl for that.
He goes, I mean, they're kind of, they got hard skin, you know? They're kind of rough customers.
But there's no, like,
Well, yeah, he stole the rock from Ricky Rockefeller.
Is Ricky a good guy?
I mean, Ricky's better than most of the guys. I mean, honestly, he holds the respect of most people in Twin River. Like, he's a good guy.
Okay. Can I roll an investigation just to kind of look to see what else is going on in this in this place?
Yeah. Roll.
You need to tell me everything that is in this. You need to list off, like, that rock list, everything that's in here. That's a 28.
Oh, damn.
I don't know what exactly you're looking for. Like, are we looking for
is there something in maybe
a confession note that's like, I fucking killed a guy?
No, I was looking to try to see if I should steal a bunch of valuable rocks from him, or if there was a magical item in here that I might find useful.
Yeah, here's what happens. You go to one of the rocks, and you pick it up, and some paint comes off. And it's a fake.
Oh, pick up a few more rocks.
You pick up a few more rocks, and they're fakes too.
Noted.
Gross.
The ones I picked up, the paint that's come off, I make sure it's like face down, so the part that's still painted is up.
Yeah, you carefully put the fake rocks back down, and as you're doing that, you also see on the store counter where you'd go to check out is a bag of holding.
Oh, I'm gonna grab that.
Okay.
I want to put the rock that we're stealing in it, but before I do that, are there any traps or alarms around the rock?
You get ready to pick up the rock, and you see that it's on a little pressure plate.
Oh, okay. Earl, stand back.
Okay.
Can I try to disarm it?
Yeah. Roll these tools.
It's a 26.
Yeah, you look at the trap. You're able to sort of see sort of a line in the floor where there are boards misaligned as if someone pulled them up. And you see along the back wall, there are a series of holes as if when you pick this up, arrows are going to fly out.
Oh, yeah.
So you pull back one of the boards, you find sort of the tripwire, and you're able to snip it.
Great, yeah. I do that. I then pick up the stone, put it in the bag of holding, and say, Earl, this is the last part. Can you just put like a big illusory script on the wall when you enter that just says, you know what you did? Like dripping, but like dripping.
Yeah, like give it a like give it like a creepy feel. Font. Like a like yeah, 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 yeah. Right, no, yeah. Yeah.
Like that book series we read as kids, Goose Pimples.
Great. You he puts out script on the wall. It says, you know what you did.
Oh, and the last part, Earl, there's gonna be one more little bit.
Okay.
It says in like regular writing. Like, it'll be dot, 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 we'll be in touch.
Okay, yeah. He puts that, and he says, cool, and I'm going to set it so that only Rocky Rhodes can see it.
And me.
And, well, okay, and us, yeah.
Yeah, great, yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Yes. We take the Rocky, get the fuck out of there.
Great. Yeah, y'all leave.
Great.
Y'all leave. He sends a message to Ricky Rockefeller, and Ricky says, cool,
I'll hang out outside of Rocky Rhodes' Rocky Emporium tomorrow to watch that fool's face.
And you start heading back to the Wet Rat. As you do, Earl says, hey, Stump, you're a good guy.
Yeah, you're not too bad yourself.
No, I mean, like, you know, like, knocking over Rocky Rhodes. He's kind of a scumbag. Doing a good one for Ricky Rockefeller. Tonight was fun. It was cool to hang out with you, and I had a really good time, and you're a good friend, and you're doing this all for your kid, you know?
Yeah, I mean, thanks. You helped me out too. I completely forgot it. If it hadn't been for you, I would have forgot about the Rocks altogether.
Yeah. You seem like a cool guy, and I'm sure your family misses you a lot, so I hope you get to see him again soon.
Thanks. Yeah, me too.
And he like puts an arm around you, and he says, let's go get some drinks.
Oh, yeah, let's go do it.
And you head back to the Wet Rat.
Get absolutely hammered with Earl.
Yeah, y'all spend the rest of the night like, drunk pillow fighting.
Like, I'm gonna in our underwear. Just, like, to the point where, like, I wake up and still have a level of exhaustion. Completely hungover.
You head back to the Wet Rat with Earl. You toast to a successful heist, and you feel a little bit of that spark that you used to feel during your life of crime, a little bit of that mission accomplished feeling, that feeling of success, that feeling of warmth that comes after the excitement begins to die away. And you feel it again, maybe not as strongly as you used to, but just a little bit. And as you look down and see the rock tucked safely away in your knapsack, you feel the pull of your family as well. And these two feelings, once opposed, now sit hand in hand. For the first time, maybe ever. As the evening comes to a close, you all, one by one, make your way back to the Wet Rat. Hayden, you are walking back to the bar, still filled with memories. And as you walk up to the bar, which now has started to slow down a little bit, people are starting to exit. Not as many people are walking in as they are walking out. But one person who is walking in is one Stump Steenling. And both of you sort of look at each other as if to say, what are you doing outside?
I'm Carl from HR.
You're Carl from HR.
With the hat.
Good to see you, Carl. I love to make a complaint, though. Someone's little goblin kid tried to steal this rock from me. I really just...
You know...
I couldn't believe
it. It's funny you mentioned that, because I also had an encounter with a goblin kid.
Weird. Hey, Salome, do you have an interaction with a goblin kid?
Yeah, Salome, where's your goblin kid?
You both walk inside. Salome, you're seated at the bar. As you do, the real world sort of starts to come back to you around you. The dancing of the fairy fires sort of begins to fade. And Salome, you look over and see two familiar fairy fires slowly turning back into Hayden and Stump.
Do I see the wisps on Hayden and Stump?
You do. Just for a moment.
Y'all come in and see Salome just grinning from ear to ear and weeping on a bar stool.
Oh, honey. Is everything all right?
Looks like your night went wildly different than ours.
Y'all are just so beautiful.
No. Should I be less beautiful? Am I upsetting you?
No. I'm sorry. I'm just real happy to know y'all.
I'm happy to know you too.
Good to know you too, kid.
I'm a little emotional. I met an old family friend.
Here?
I think so, sort of. Small world and all that.
I guess.
I created a new child gang.
I destroyed a business.
Oh, hey,
wiping
what?
The tears wiping tears from her eyes. Salome's like, well, no shit, y'all.
Oh, I also got this bag of holding.
What?
Oh.
Yeah, we got one of those now too.
Oh my god,
it's real nice.
You got any tissues in there?
No, just rocks right now.
Damn,
that would be very uncomfortable to use to dry tears.
You all share a laugh, order another round at the bar, and enjoy yourselves. The party rages on around you. The night seems to last forever, and Twin River feels just the smallest bit like home. And that is where we'll pick up next time.
Listening to episode 16 of Mage Hand High Five, The Badlands. Stay tuned after this for a promo from our friends at the Monsters Playbook. Want to hear us talk more about our show? Check out our Patreon at patreon.com/magehandhighfive. You can join in on the down low and hear us talk about all the nitty-gritty and get some behind-the-scenes bonus content. Thanks to Jacob Kirzner for our orchestrations and Shane Smith for our logo and our cover art. Check out our website at www.magehandhighfive.com and look for us all over social media. We're on TikTok, we're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Discord, and wherever we may be, we're going to be there at Magehand High Five. Go to your podcatcher of choice and throw a 5-star review our way. And now we're going to shout out all of our subscribers on Patreon. There's Al Forrestoki, Allison DeVelvis, A.M. Lovelies, Avery Spar, Carrie Lee, Chicken Too Tasty, Das Carpenter, Debbie, Diana Bacon, Evan Noon, Jonathan Gunn, Jelata Pang, Chloe Utley, Laura, El DeSoul, Liz Spar, Michael Clevenger, Mira the Nerd, Nathan Ritter, Sammy Richardson, and Tyler Gardner. You're all fantastic and cannot be improved upon. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your foes about the show. People all over the world, join hands, start a love train. And when you do it, use the hashtag MHH5. And hey, how about a high five?
My name is Johnny, and I'm the host, executive producer, and Prince of Lies for the Monsters Playbook. What's the Monsters Playbook? It's an actual play Monster of the Week podcast set in my hometown of Minneapolis, Minnesota, where no monster can hurt you as badly as you can hurt yourself. It's a character-focused adventure where you'll meet Kira Ashwood, a journalist with a cult past she's desperate to atone for, and a secret power hidden even from herself. Casey Davis, a taciturn secret agent becoming disillusioned with the agency she thought she could trust. Theo Nessos, a professional sorceress trying to escape the shadow of her powerful magical family. And Mark Clayton, a pretty haunted introvert who just wants to make sense of his powers and all the weird things that keep happening to him. This is a show where danger could just as easily come from an otherworldly threat as from the fragile emotions that anchor our characters and bind them together. If you like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, The Dresden Files, or any city-set supernatural story with monstrous threats and messy feelings, check out The Monsters Playbook. New episodes every other Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts.